Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels left alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and of course, I'm going to introduce the female, Miss Henry Hebert.
Hello.
And then we also have Mr. Taj Jackson.
Hello.
Always playing around, Taj. And Terrell Jackson.
Hi, everyone.
Nice. And then Henry, we have a special guest. Do you want to introduce our special guest?
We do. Today our guest is Sharon Ellers, who is the founding member of Grief Reiki, but providing grief relief was not always her business. Prior to 2014, Sharon was an executive-level professional with management, national policy, information technology, cybersecurity, strategic planning, and leadership experience in the commercial, defense, industrial intelligence, and federal sectors. Wow. Her professional highlight was working for a presidential appointee in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and throughout her career, she won numerous accolades for her superior performance and exceptional leadership, including the Officer of the Director of National Intelligence, as well as the Chief Information Officer Chamberlain Award. Congratulations on that. That's pretty big. But after the suicides of a close friend and a former fiancé within a two-year period, Sharon was confused about how many people either avoided her or didn't want to talk about these events. So in her grief, Sharon tried to make sense of it all, but it seemed like it was never the right time to bring it up with anyone. So she took a deep breath and tried to work through the grief on her own, and eventually she dragged herself into work and somehow made it through the days and weeks following. And her thought was there had to be a better way than what she was experiencing. So after working in corporate America for almost 30 years, Sharon decided to start her own company to offer a multidimensional approach to grief through emotional recovery and spiritual healing. And now she is a certified grief recovery specialist with the Grief Recovery Institute and a Reiki master. So welcome, Sharon.
Thank you. Did I do well with that?
That was very solid.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be here.
Sweet.
So, you're here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sharon, I have a quick question off the bat. I've never heard of the term grief Reiki. So that's my first question. What is Grief Reiki?
So Grief Reiki is actually my own compilation of putting two things together. It doesn't exist except for me and my company. And what it is it's taking how we deal with grief and combining it with the spiritual practice of Reiki, which is a Japanese energy healing Japanese energy healing practice, which helps us to relax and be calm and bring something to grievers that really helps them to get through the emotional, physical, and spiritual components of grief.
So Reiki seems a bit out of left field from your previous career in terms of cyber intelligence.
It is.
right? I mean, how did you...
How did you make that transformation?
So in working in Washington, I was very stressed out. And
you were an engineer, right?
Yes, a cybersecurity engineer. And I worked in D.C. And my boss, like I said, was a presidential appointee. And we were always, always, always moving around with all the different intelligence agencies. So, you know, the stress
was
high.
Like the NSA, the CIA.
NSA, CIA.
FBI, the all.
Exactly. And I was on a business trip, actually, back here in California. I was living in D.C., and I was at a coffee shop and I saw sort of somebody's business card up there that said stress reduction, and I thought, oh, this was meant for me. I had no idea what it was personally, and so I made an appointment. Something just told me to make an appointment. I made the appointment, and I guess the rest is history. I felt so good when it was done. I thought, well, there's got to be something to this.
So then you were okay with it being that sort of like woo-woo-ness kind
of? Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm an engineer, so I'm more analytical and scientific, and so it was really more, if it made me feel better, I'm okay with it. But I started to study it to understand a little bit about what it meant, and the more I learned about it and the more I realized it worked, I decided to go on my own path to becoming a Reiki master. So I'm actually thankful that I did. Mm.
So then how does it actually work in terms of the stress with Reiki?
Reiki harnesses the universal energy force that we have in our lives. I mean, everything is made up of energy, right? Humans are made up of energy. The stuff all around us is made up of energy. And the Japanese, Dr. Makao Usui, was actually the original founder of Reiki, rediscovering Reiki, and he found that in laying hands, which has been done for thousands and thousands of years, but in laying hands on individual, that you can start to feel the energy shift within your body. And when things are blocked, you get ill and you don't feel well. So doing the Reiki actually helps you to feel balanced and relaxed.
So then how did you discover that Reiki could really help out not only with stress, but also with grief?
Well, I think what happened was I was starting to get very stressed with work and was going through the various, the motions to find something. I got into the Reiki, receiving Reiki, and then I started to realize it was important for me to maybe learn a little bit more about it. I had my best friend died by suicide. And after she passed away, I found that my grief was overwhelming. And so I started to practice the Reiki on myself to sort of keep me a little bit calmer. It didn't take my grief away, but it certainly helped me to get through the day and get through a stressful job. Mm-hmm. So it didn't compound, you know, the grief compounded on top of everything that was going on with work. So the Reiki really helped to bring me into balance and kind of, you know, keep me energized to get through the day, which was really, really hard.
How would it alleviate the grief in terms of the thick emotions?
Well, I think what it did, I've tended over the years to protect my heart. I think we all do that. And what you find when you're grieving is that sometimes your heart bursts open. And I think the natural tendency is to try to keep that wall there. And I think what grieving and Reiki did for me was it helped me to open my heart so that I could more honestly associate my feelings with what I was going through, that's the only way you get through grief. You can't avoid it. You can't block it. You have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I think Reiki, in allowing me to be calmer, opened up my heart and allowed me to really feel my grief, which is what I needed to do to move forward.
And you can't really avoid the grief emotions.
You can, but you won't be successful. I think the more you avoid it, the more it builds up to a point where, you know, you kind of explode. And that could be physically, emotionally, or spiritually. And I think the Reiki helped me to relax to the point that my heart allowed me to grieve.
I think that's so important because obviously my brothers and I lost our parent at a real young age. And at the time, I think music was so big for us, and that was a way for us to mm-hmm. deal with it in a way. But I think it's so important for people out there, if you lose someone, to understand you have to find a way to get it out. And a lot of kids they don't like therapy or to deal with counseling, you know, the traditional form of it when you're in a room talking to someone. So I just think it's important that you find your outlet. And I'd never heard of Reiki. So it's really cool hearing your story and hearing how it's helped you. So it's really cool.
Thank you.
Are you able to talk to us a little bit about your friend?
Yeah. My best friend, Joy. I mean, we were friends for forever. Her name doesn't do her personality justice. I mean, she would walk into a room and basically, you know, smoke and drink and tell blonde jokes. And I mean, she just had the greatest.
She was a joy to be around.
She was a joy. Joy is everywhere. That's what we used to say. But she suffered from depression. She had been, had some issues as a child, and I think carried that with her throughout her life. So It got to the point towards the end where she just was in a bad place and decided that she would, kill herself. And, my whole world just blew apart. I mean, we talk to each other every day. And so having that person that's normally there for you be gone was just devastating.
How did you find out that she committed suicide?
She had sort of had a history of issues and over time and had threatened to do it before. But on this particular day, we had talked during the day, and she seemed okay. She wasn't 100%, but then Joy wasn't really 100% towards the end anyway. Her husband called me on a Sunday night, and I had just been thinking about Joy and told him that. And he says, well, I'm calling to tell you that, Joy committed suicide or died by suicide tonight. So my Sunday, just that day, just burst my whole world apart.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I know it was incredibly tough for you, just hearing the news. Did you also place a bit of guilt on yourself?
Guilt is a good word. Yes, absolutely, I did. And you know what? I realized that there were so many things that I could have done differently, or maybe that I should have said, or then you start second-guessing everything you've done or said throughout your whole relationship with somebody. And in fact, guilt is really not a fair word to put on people, because you judge yourself enough, and then somebody passes away, and, you're not responsible for it. But it's the first thing that you go to, because that's what we've been taught. It's like, what could I have done differently?
I think that's strong too. Because I think a lot of people naturally, they want to do everything and help as many people, and then if something like this happens, you feel like I let someone down.
Especially if you had just talked to her some hours before too. It's like, did I not?
I went through everything I could have said, and I'm thinking, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I said something. Obviously, her husband and her had discussions afterwards. So what did he say? Why isn't he telling me? But though, as I've gone through the grief recovery work, I've realized that guilt really implies intent to harm. And there's really a malicious connotation that goes with that. And when you think about it, when you love somebody, you may say something that's inappropriate, or you may not do everything that's perfect because we're human, but realizing that guilt isn't the right word to put with losing somebody that you love, because you're just beating yourself up more. And if you weren't doing it with a malicious intent, then there really isn't anything to be guilty about.
Was that the first time you really lost somebody that you really loved or that was close in age to you?
Yeah, that was really the first time. I mean, I've lost my grandparents, and not to diminish that, because that does have a big impact on your life. But when it's somebody that you're around all the time, I mean, like I said, we talked every day, and she would call with her joyful personality and on Sunday mornings wake me up and say hi and what's going on. And so I, like I said, I felt like my whole world had fallen apart. I felt lost, completely lost.
So what were the days like afterwards in terms of the emotions and your experience of grief?
I was in a complete fog. I mean, she passed away on a Sunday night. I got to work somehow the next day. I have no idea why. I don't remember getting to work. I just know I was there, and then I sat at the computer screen and just stared at it. I don't think I accomplished anything. I cried and finally decided that it didn't make sense to be at work. I don't know why I did. It just, it's you get into that routine, you think, well, I just have to keep going, and I did, and it wasn't the right thing to do, and so I ended up going home. But my emotions were up and down. I felt like I had a knot in my stomach. It was hard to eat. The tears just kept coming. I couldn't stop them. I couldn't control them. And when you're an engineer, you're used to being able to kind of control your life, and it wasn't working very well. So, it was something I'd never experienced at that depth before.
What about your family, friends, coworkers? What did they say to you, or did they treat you any different, or?
It's interesting. With work, I didn't tell anybody because, one, there's a stigma, and two, I didn't know what to say. I mean, I could barely even say the word suicide without, I couldn't even say her name without crying, let alone try to explain it to somebody. My kids, who were in high school at the time, I was very honest with them and very open. I mean, they saw me on the floor, literally collapsed in tears. And I think because I was able to show my emotions, they felt that it was okay for them to show their emotions. But, you know, most people avoided me. It's like, you know, they didn't want to talk to me because they didn't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And so they go the opposite direction and don't say anything at all. So you start to feel very isolated.
So you lost your best friend and then lost some of your friends who weren't able to support you. That must have been really hard.
It's like a double whammy, and I don't think people do it on purpose. I think they just don't know. We haven't really given society the right tools to deal with grief, mm-hmm. and we certainly don't give people the right tools to deal with suicide. So I think in a lot of ways, avoiding me meant that they didn't have to talk about it, because it might bring up their own feelings of grief, and people don't want to go there, right? It's not one mm-hmm. of those emotions that we've been taught to face, and so if they don't see me, then they don't have to deal with it. So, you know, at first I personalized it, and I thought, you know, what happened? I didn't do anything. But then I realized over time that it has nothing to do with me. It's usually because they don't have the tools or they don't want to deal with their own grief.
And so on that note, I have to admit that this morning in preparing, I actually was thinking about saying the word suicide. And I felt a pit in my stomach, and I made myself say it out loud 10 times, suicide, 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 because it is. It seems like, as you said, like as a society, we aren't taught to really readily share like our vulnerable emotions or fragile like mental states. I mean, you were at work in cybersecurity. People had no idea that inside your world was crumbling.
Right.
And yet you're trying to keep it together, but then you're going through these rolling waves of emotion. And you've been working with these people probably what?
For a few years,
for a few years,
at least.
And they had no idea like what was really happening. And I just think it's you know, it's interesting that, you know, I was thinking, are we really taught to, you know, help one another out? We're in this moment. And especially with something with suicide, there's a stigma to it. And so I think with that, it's like, I'd love to talk to you about, you know, the stigma when people die by suicide. What was your experience of it? And what do you think about, you know, and more in depth about just grief and suicide in general and society?
Well, I think grief in and of itself is probably one of the toughest topics in America. And so, you know, people avoid that pretty easily. You know, we're taught how to deal with acquiring things, but we really aren't taught what to do when you lose something. And that's why grief is so prevalent in so many different things that we do in our lives. I mean, just changing schools, you know, moving. So grief is always around. And I think having to deal with it means we have to show our emotions. And somewhere along the line, from infants until childhood, we're taught that showing our emotions are good. And then all of a sudden, some switch flips and says, you know, don't do that anymore. So when we're grieving, we stop everything. We stop showing people because we don't want them to judge or analyze us. We want to be mm-hmm. recognized and part of the, you know, part of the team. And when you've got something going on, people can ostracize you. So we call that in the grief recovery method Academy Award winning grievers. We splash on that smile and we tell people we're doing good and we're okay.
Oh, I have that. I'm fine.
And then on the inside, you feel like your whole, you know, your whole interior is just falling apart. So, you know, we play that game, and that's because we've been taught not to show our emotions and not to talk about grief in general, and definitely not to talk about suicide.
I think we had talked earlier about how we're also taught to go to our room and, you know, and cry. And then also in terms of sibling rankings, like I'm the youngest, and you mentioned that you're the oldest. So how were you raised as being the oldest to handle?
I think as the oldest, I was taught to protect my sister and be strong for her. And so I would put that wall up around my heart so that people didn't bully her, you know, because we were little and goofy and all those things happen on the schoolyard. But I remember over time making sure that the heart was protected. So if they were bullying her, it didn't affect me. And I think as the oldest, you know, that's one of the things that we're taught is to be strong. You know, be strong. Don't let her see, don't let anybody else see that you're having, you know, a hard day or having a hard time. And that's a misnomer. I mean, that doesn't work, obviously. But that's what we're taught, you know, be strong for others, especially as the oldest. You know, you got to hang in there so that the rest of your family doesn't see that you're having a tough time.
It is interesting, the whole be strong and be happy, notion, and when something is going on and somebody's having a moment, I've noticed that there are people that either sit and listen or they're really there, or they bolt the other way because they don't understand what to do for the emotional volcano. And if you're the one who like actually needs the help and you're emotionally volcanoing, it's like you see them running away and you're just left
feeling isolated
and alone, which then can compound like the rejection feeling of like, oh my God, I already feel like I'm having a hard day with this depression or sadness from this grief or loss that I'm going through. Then all of a sudden, the person that I somehow may have just turned to because they were there just bolted and you're left.
We see that happen a lot through the courses or through the groups that I've given over the last couple of years. So many people come in and say, you know, I thought my family members would be there for me, or I have a best friend and my best friend won't even talk to me because, you know, I'm going through this grief. And it's like grieving twice, right? You've got the grief from the death of the person that you loved, but you've also got the grief from the people around you not wanting, again, to either deal with it themselves or not knowing what to say. And I think that's the importance of having, you know, recovery programs where you can give that.
I lost my best friend 5 years ago, and I had a friend recently say to me, my God, it's been 5 years. When are you going to get over it? Mm. And it was so just jolting to me, and it made me close up, and I'm having a hard time now just even wanting to authentically communicate, and I'm doing the, I'm fine, everything's great, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like they take your sense of, I don't know if it's just your security with the friendship, like the rug is just swept out from under you, that you then have a hard time, like, can I trust this person because I'm in a vulnerable space? So you kind of create more of a defense system for yourself.
Well, I think one of the problems is that we intellectualize grief, and people say things with good intentions because they don't realize that there are other ways to say them. So they end up saying things like they're in a better place, they're not suffering anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the misnomers about time healing all wounds. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't think I'm ever going to get over Joy or John's death, never. Mm-hmm. And so there is no time limit. And I think, you know, being communicative with people, I found that it's easier for me to say now how I'm feeling. Like, I'm having a hard day today. I was thinking about Joy, you know, her birthday's next week, that kind of stuff. And that helps people to kind of relax a little bit more.
Today we have Sharon Ellers on our show. And please, people, if you have any questions, reach us at Twitter at DDJ Foundation. Right, Tosh? Did I say that right?
Yes, DDJ Foundation.
Let me know if I'm doing that wrong.
I will.
But ask any questions. Todd is on the social media wing filtering questions, and he's going to relay the best questions for this show.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. And I forgot my disclaimer.
You did.
We are licensed therapists, so any of you who are going through any type of grief or any serious situation, please seek licensed help. That is very, very important. What else do we have?
We have, Tara, are you going to say something?
No, because TJ just said it.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, TJ, you stole his thunder.
You know what? I did. But you know what? I have something else he could have said, because he could have stolen my thunder. And that is, for information about the Dede Jackson Foundation.
Now he just wants to do it all.
He's
and the youngest.
As I've always
out.
Said, we are building a community for everyone. You know, and Sharon's mentioned this. Actually, we were talking about this yesterday. Grief is something that we don't learn how to deal with properly in this world. We learn how to win. We all love winning and celebrating. But when we lose, our things are taken from us. We don't really take the time to really understand how to cope with that. So please go to www.ddjf.org. It's something we're all very passionate about. And we're here to help everyone with their grief.
You want to keep talking?
That's it.
All right, so we have a few more questions for you.
Sure.
Thank you so much for being on with us, Sharon. So 2 years after losing your best friend Joy to suicide, your former fiance that you were with for 10 years shot himself. Can you share with us the impact that this made on you?
You know, and I could cry just talking about it still, that it, you know, when you love somebody from the whole of your being, it's hard to even put into words what their death does to you. I mean, there isn't a word in the dictionary to cover those feelings. I mean, people can ask you and you can't even explain it. You feel empty, you feel soulless, you feel lost, you feel in a fog, you feel, you just feel like your whole world has changed. And, you know, when you've experienced great love, and that's true with family members as well, you know, the intensity of your grief, you know, usually correlates to the intensity of your love. And so the stronger the love, the stronger the grief. And that's even harder to deal with. You know, it's really tough for people to even know what to do because there isn't a place typically to go to find out.
Why do you think John committed suicide?
You know, John, we broke up a few years before his death because he was just not the person that I recognized anymore. He was very angry all the time and kind of in a victim role, and it was hard to be around him. And over time, I think he just started to abuse drugs and was in an accident and then needed pain pills and then alcohol. And I think just over time, he just couldn't take it. He just couldn't take it and made that decision. He actually planned his suicide. Joy did not. Joy did that sort of out of something. And
did either one of them leave a note?
Both of them left notes. Yeah, both of them left notes. Joyce was in lipstick on the, I can see it. Joyce was on lipstick in her bathroom.
What did it say?
It says, "Thank you, friends and family, for your support." And I knew that that was just her way of kind of being sarcastic. I don't think she meant it. I think she felt that she was not being supportive. And so that's what she had written in lipstick.
How did she commit suicide?
She put a gun to her head as well.
Did John also leave a note?
John left notes all over the house. We still owned a house in Virginia, and the police called me. I was out here, he was back there, but the police called me and he had notes all over the house to a variety of different people.
Can you ever really figure out why someone commits suicide?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, they're not really themselves at that time in their lives. And, you know, who are we to say that we know what was going on? I mean, we weren't in their heads. I can't fathom. I tried, believe me, after Joy and John both died, I tried to figure it out. And you just do more damage sitting there putting yourself through, you know, all those questions of things that don't make sense. You know, you can't make sense of something that doesn't make sense, and suicide is one of those things that doesn't make sense.
Going through those losses, I strongly assume family, friends helped you cope. Was there any other type of groups or any other outlets you had that helped you recover?
I found I was pretty much isolated. I mean, they tried, but they didn't know what to do. So after John died specifically, I gravitated towards the Dee Dee Hirsch Foundation, which is in Culver City. They have survivors of suicide support group. And I found that to be very helpful. It gave me an opportunity to actually say the word suicide.
So after Joy, did you get help or?
I did not. I thought I was strong, you know, be strong. You got the wall and the whole bit. You know, I thought I could take care of it myself. I really didn't get professional help. I tried to read books thinking that maybe there'd be some glimmer of, you know, inspiration. And I tried to find ways on my own to
after
get
Joy?
Through my grief. Yes, with Joy.
So then with John, 2 years later, it just kind of compounded the grief. Is that when you realized I really need to get help?
I realized I couldn't do it by myself. The emotions were just so overwhelming that I thought I needed to find somebody that would hear how I was feeling, because I didn't know if I was feeling normal or, you know, you don't know with grief what's normal. So the Dee Dee Hirsch Suicide Survivors Group was very helpful for me. I found that to be very cathartic.
So you also mentioned that you were able to say the word suicide. Is that, so in talking to people about John and Joy committing suicide, were you not even able to really share the story? People didn't want to hear the word suicide?
Absolutely, to all of the above. People don't want to hear it. People don't want to say it. People don't, it's almost like you have, remember when we read in school the scarlet letter? It's like you have that scarlet letter on your forehead and people can see it, you know, from the valley, or they can see it from another state, and they just completely go the opposite direction because they don't know how to process the fact that somebody would take their own life. And so they don't want to say it. They don't want to face it. It was hard for me. I had to tell my kids, and that was heartbreaking.
What did you tell him? Because John was like a stepdad to them.
He was. After Joy passed away, you know, they had already kind of been exposed to somebody dying by suicide. So when John died, I remember my youngest daughter saying to me right off the bat, "How, Mom? How did he die?" It's like she knew. And I had to say, he killed himself. You know, he put a gun to his head. You know, I'm so sorry. And we just cried. I mean, I didn't know. I think not telling them the truth is unfair. They were in high school. Trying to hide it wasn't fair. I think I needed to be honest with them so they could grieve and understand, you know, that suicide is a disease. It's a mental health
disease.
How
old were they?
My daughter, it was in 2012. So my daughter was in maybe a junior or senior in high school, and my son was already in college.
Did you regret ever telling him the truth?
No, I don't, because I think...
Even in the past, when you told him, you never regretted?
No, because I felt like I grew up in an environment, and again, you know, I think it's a generational thing, where our parents, my parents... they didn't sit down with us. You didn't sit around the dinner table and talk about somebody who died. I mean, it kind of just kind of was a subject that came up in school. You know, people passed away, and I went to Catholic school, and the nuns never said anything.
So did I.
Yeah, I mean, so there was never really a family conversation about it, and I just wanted to change that. I wanted my kids to grow up with a healthy idea about being happy, but also being sad, and that being sad is a part of life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things aren't always going to be good.
I have to repeat that, because that's so important. I think, like I was saying, we have an idea that only the good things should be trumpeted, mm-hmm. and everything that happens bad or sad should be muted. And I respect exactly what you said, Sharon, because I think that's right on. Life isn't always great. There's going to be bad times and sad times, and that comes with life. And you have to learn to be able to deal with it.
Well, being able to learn how to handle loss, I mean, because there's so many different things that are lost. I mean, loss of a relationship, loss of a loved one, loss of a pet, loss of a home. We deal with loss almost on a daily basis, and we don't even realize it.
Exactly.
So if we get the tools and the skills to actually learn at a young age, which I commend you, to be honest, with your kids. So what would you recommend in terms of children if somebody's going out there, going through this right now, and they have kids?
The most important thing is for the adults to be honest about their emotions and to share, you know, how they're feeling, so that the kids know that it's okay to be sad. I think being honest with children, depending on their age, right, is appropriate. And if you try to work around it by saying things like, you know, grandma's sleeping, you know, they don't understand that. I mean, they might be afraid to go to sleep when they go to bed mm-hmm. at night. And mm-hmm. so saying things like, you know, grandma's died and dad's really, your mom's really sad about this. My heart is breaking. You know, I don't know how to tell you how I'm feeling, but I'm so very sad. I think being honest about it, but that means the parents have to be honest with themselves about their emotional truth. And that's not always easy.
Do you think support groups are also good for children?
I think support groups are excellent. And I think the foundation's mission of music therapy is wonderful. Music got me through it got me through John, because I listened to all the songs that we used to listen to so I could cry when I was walking on the beach and no one would know. I think for children, it so resonates with them to be able to do, you know, do something that's meaningful for them. Write a song, do art, whatever it is to express their grief. It's not always just talking. Sometimes it's taking action and doing, you know, doing other things as well.
So how did specifically the suicide support group help you?
It allowed me to say the word suicide and not have people look at me or run the other direction, because they had all been through mothers, sisters, brothers, you know, boyfriends. They'd all been through something. And being able to share my story. I mean, grievers...
So did you learn essentially how to tell your story? And by being around other people who are like moms, dads, brothers, sisters, you realize that suicide wasn't... It was... it was like everyone could experience
exactly.
suicide.
Grief, I mean, whether it's suicide or not, grief exists, and everybody experiences it, I mean, on a daily basis. I mean, we can't get away from it. And so being honest and being able to tell your story, grievers just want to be heard. They don't want to be judged. They don't want to be criticized. They don't want to be analyzed. They just want to be heard. So allowing someone to actually listen to my story about Joy and John, you know, meant everything.
Besides support groups and Reiki, what did you do for grief, to get you through the grief?
I faced it. I learned after time that the support group, although it was wonderful in value for me, I needed something that was more actionable, something where, you know, as an engineer, I could kind of work through a process, work through some steps. So I found the Grief Recovery Institute and decided that I would be certified as a grief recovery specialist. And then hopefully in doing that, I would be able to get through my own grief and then help others get through their grief as well.
So wait a minute, what is, they do the grief recovery method, and what is that?
The grief recovery method is an actionable plan to help people get through the different losses that they have in their life. And in fact, there's over 43 different losses that you can experience in life that cause the emotions associated with grief. From moving, I mean, just graduating from high school, going to college, I mean, those things can cause grief. And because we sort of pass them over and don't deal with them, it's important to understand that they do affect our life. And that's what the grief recovery method does. It helps you to let go of the pain associated with going through those variety of different loss events.
So then how specifically did it help you?
It helped me because one of the things it asks you to do is be aware of the kind of loss that you've had in your life. And you go back through your whole life and look at things that may have affected you that perhaps you didn't pay attention to. Loss of my goldfish. I remember when a bird came down and took one of our turtles, and the turtle was taken away, and no one ever told me what happened, and I was so scared, but it was gone.
One of the kids yesterday in our music therapy class did say loss of a goldfish. Do you guys remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
And then
he was joking, but I mean, it's interesting
it's
that
true.
You just said that.
Yeah. I mean, when you're not exposed to death and you're little, you know, you don't understand that death is a part of life. So anyway, you go through all of those losses and you look at them and you become aware of the things that you do when you grieve.
And you had mentioned that there's two major things that you learn, the unresolved grief and then the being complete. Can you just talk a little bit more about that?
I think unresolved grief is when we play that, I'll say song since I'm with you guys. And you play that song over and over in your head, and it keeps repeating about the things you should or shouldn't have done, the things you said and shouldn't have said. And it's like a record that goes on and on and on, and you can't let it go. And the unresolved grief results from that because you keep thinking about what you should have done, and you never let it go. So you get stuck. You get stuck, and you can become a victim to it. And in letting it go and moving forward, you get to deliver those communications that you didn't get to deliver. And that helps you to be complete. It helps you to be complete. You know, you still have happy and sad memories of your lost one, but the pain and the isolation is gone because you were able to work through that record that keeps playing in your head and let it go.
And then what else did you learn about grief through taking the grief recovery method?
There's a variety of components that you have to be honest about, and that is, you know, relationship that you had with your friends or your family who passed away. You know, we tend to either put people on a pedestal or we tend to make them the bad guy, and so you have to look at an honest relationship. You have to look at these relationships honestly. You also have to learn how to apologize mm-hmm. and how to forgive.
And take responsibility and accountability.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to step back and allow your circumstances to control you or take over, but the method helps you to let go of those things and realize that you can't put responsibility on other people to fix your grief. You have to take responsibility to do that. Otherwise, you become a victim to it, and I didn't want to have that badge, you know, that scarlet letter. Because it's not helping me. It's not helping me move forward in my life. It doesn't help me to be a better mom and a better worker.
Now, yesterday we saw Henry at our launch for our teen boys and girls Music Heals program. And she came in raving about some cool discovery about a 4 to 6 seconds Can you explain that? Because she yes, explained I did. It passionately, but I didn't follow every little thing she said. So what was she talking about?
So when we're grieving, we have common responses that we don't often realize are things that everybody goes through. You start to think you're going crazy because you're on this emotional roller coaster. But one of the things that is associated with grief is that your concentration, you're very foggy. And so one of the things that happens is it takes a griever anywhere from 4 to 6 seconds more to respond to a question because, you know, your mind is so all over the place. Mm-hmm. You don't even realize that somebody asked you a question. Like, I don't know how I got to work the day Joy died. So that 4 to 6 seconds, you know, puts you in a situation where you're either not absorbing what people are saying to you. So people have to be patient with grievers. Or, you know, your reaction time, especially when you're driving, you're more prone to accidents when you're grieving because of that reduced concentration.
I thought that was really interesting because you also, in terms of being, I can be kind of hard on myself. So I thought, wow, all this time where I've gone through grief and loss, I haven't been patient, like really patient with myself, especially if I'm sitting down to work where I'm like, why aren't I focused? Why aren't I doing this as quickly as I used to do it a couple years ago? And I start attributing it to all these other things. Maybe I didn't sleep last night, but I'm still like hard on myself. Like I should have went to bed early, da, da, da. But meanwhile, it's just understanding loss and grief and knowing like, okay, I should be patient with myself because I'm going through a process and it could be exactly. That I'm 4 to 6 seconds longer to do this now.
Right. And you just, I mean, in reality, when you're grieving, you just don't feel like it sometimes. I mean, it's like, you know, the things that maybe were important before don't seem as important anymore. Or, you know, the things that you used to like to do don't seem fun anymore. I mean, I can't even remember. There were years where I felt like I don't even know when I laughed, mm-hmm. you know, the last mm-hmm. time I laughed. When was the last time I laughed? And that's pretty sad that I couldn't even think of the last time that I laughed mm-hmm. because my emotions were so all over the place. So honoring, you're absolutely right, honoring how you're feeling and not being hard on yourself and accepting that, you know what, the days are going to be up and down and, you know, I'm going to feel hungry one day and maybe the next day I'm not, or I'm going to be sad for a day and maybe I'll have 5 days where I'm happy. But you just don't know. It takes as long as it takes, which is an unfortunate
I think my thing. Also my other favorite thing that I learned from you is about the hugs.
Yes.
Do you want to share about the hugs?
Yeah. You know, hugs are one of the greatest forms of healing, and we just don't hug as much as we should. Virginia Satir, who was a family therapist, said we need 4 hugs a day just to be normal. If we want to grow, we need 12 hugs a day. And wow. I was telling Henry that some days I don't even think I get 1 hug, you yeah. know? And it's like, wow, that's not good. If it's a form of healing and we're not hugging enough. So I know you're a hugger.
Oh,
so
she's definitely a hugger. I think, Henry, you give about 30 hugs a day, so you're definitely filling your quota.
But they're side hugs, so really
yes. yeah, so
side
you got to split them good. In half, right?
Any kind of hug is good. But we don't realize that human contact. And when you're feeling isolated in your grief and people aren't reaching out and hugging.
See, I had no idea that I was intuitively doing this, helping out everybody.
No, I'm a firm believer. I've always said the biggest hug I ever received was from my Uncle Jermaine, probably hours after I found out my mother had passed. And that hug basically reassured me. So I definitely am right behind you with the hugs. It's so important.
I think also the other interesting bit that I learned from you was the how when someone passes away and then the funeral happens, afterwards people tend to get sick, you had said?
Well, yeah. I think what happens is because we neglect our own self-care and because we're going through the motions of the funeral with the emotions of the grief that are associated with it, you know, that's a definite energy depleting. It depletes the energy in our body. And people who are grieving are pretty assured that, you know, if they don't take care of their health, that they will get sick within a certain period of time, you know, as they're going through their grief. And that's, again, like we said, it either accidents or illness are very common for grievers.
So we want to remind everybody that we are on Twitter. Our handle is DDJ Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And we are building a community of support on our social media. Taj?
Our social media man, Taj Jackson.
Oh, questions. We have one from Amelia.
Hi, Amelia.
Hello, Amelia.
Wants to know, I guess this is for everyone. Did you try and find things to take your mind off of the loss of your loved ones? If so, what was it and how did it benefit?
Good question, Amelia. I think one of the things that we do, or that we've been taught to do, is to find things to keep us distracted. And so one of the things that I did was I became a workaholic. I worked maybe 60, 70 hours a week just so I wouldn't have to think about it. So did it work? No, absolutely not.
I was about to ask, is that a good thing or
no,
a bad thing?
No, it's a bad thing. It's a bad thing. Now, there are healthy things like music. Those are things, you know, that help you with that. But I think when you try to avoid your grief, you tend to find that it doesn't work, and it just compounds, and then you end up exploding. And that's really kind of what happened with me, is I felt in working all of those hours, I realized that work was not fulfilling, which is why I decided I didn't want to go down that path anymore. So that was a good question. Keeping busy is not a good idea. Finding healthy ways to grieve is.
Can I ask you another question?
Yes.
Tell me about, you wrote a book?
I did. I'm in the process of writing a book, but okay. I also was a contributor to a book called Grief Diary, Surviving Loss by Suicide. And that book, in writing down the story of Joy and John, I found to be very healing. So in answering Amelia's question, those kind of things like the music therapy and writing, you know, journaling, whatever works for you, taking walks in nature, whatever makes you feel healthy. That was my way of being able to work through my grief, was being able to contribute to that book.
Now, our listeners can purchase the book as well?
It's on Amazon. It's there's a whole Grief Diary series. They have books on losing a parent, all kinds of different.
So I have a question for you. So our show is called Power of Love, and we also are taking our grief and putting it into action by doing this show, as well as creating music therapy programs for kids. And so for you, now you moved through the experience of, you know, not losing just one but two friends within 2 years of each other. And what happened? How are you putting your own grief into action? Are you still in cyber intelligence? Are you... Where are you at now?
I'm doing cyber intelligence, cybersecurity work part-time, and I'm branching out into working with people and helping them get through their grief as a grief recovery specialist, and using the Reiki to kind of bring the spiritual and physical healing parts of it. I find it so fulfilling to sit down with people and help them take the actions required to let go of the pain. I mean, we can live with pain for the rest of our lives if we don't do something, and pain is not good. It's not healthy, and it doesn't help you move forward. So it's been very wonderful for me to be able to reach out and help the community where I live.
So do you think through this you found a new calling?
I have. I think I was always sort of an empath, and so working in Washington doesn't necessarily go with that, which is why I probably struggled with it. You know, there's a lot of negative energy. But yeah, this is brand new for me, and it feels like I'm in the right place doing this now.
So we are fundraising still for our next Music Heals class for children who are suffering loss and grief to find hope and inspiration through learning how to write and record their own story into song. And we hope that if you find what we are doing is helpful to you, then you'll help us continue to turn grief into positive action. A donation of any amount will make a huge impact on a child's life and empower them to grieve, grow, and heal. Thank you very much for considering this opportunity to make a difference with us. And please spread the word. The more donations and support we have, then the more children we can help.
I know this is on behalf of all of us. Sharon, big thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much.
And you're amazing. You really are. I've learned so much in this time, and I can't thank you enough for everything you did, because you've helped a lot of people. So thank you, Sharon.
Thank you for having me.
Is there any other announcements we have?
Terrell?
What are you thinking, Terrell?
No, if you feel you are in crisis, whether or not you are thinking about killing yourself, or if you need help with substance abuse, economic worries, relationship and family problems, sexual orientation, illness, getting over abuse, depression, mental and physical illness, and even loneliness, no matter what problems you are dealing with, there's help out there and you are not alone.
Very true.
And by calling the National Suicide Prevention Line, 1-800-273-TALK, you'll be connected to a skilled, trained counselor at a crisis center in your area anytime, 24/7, and they'll be able to help you and help you find a reason to keep living. Or
If you feel more comfortable texting, then please use the crisis text line, which is text, S-T-A-R-T, or to 7474. And if you're international, you can find out about resources at International Association for Suicide Prevention Resources. And I'm going to read the website, which is long. www.iasp.info/resources/crisis_centers, and that's C-E-N-T-R-E-S. Or you can go to, which is much easier, www.suicide.org. Or if you have a child that needs help, childhelpinternational.org. And if you're currently in an emergency, please call the emergency telephone number in your country. And you guys are looking at me because we're running out of time.
Yeah, we have pretty much zero time. But I do want to say something real quick to all our listeners. Thank you for listening. Again, this is a community thing. We will be here every Wednesday from 1 to 2. Sharon, what's the last giveaway? What's the last takeaway you would say?
How would people find you, Sharon?
I'm at www.grief-reiki.com.
Okay. Is that it?
And then Todd?
That's it.
Yes.
Do you want to give some handles? Or?
Sure. Not in this pressure.
Can do attitude. Right. You can do it.
Seriously?
Yeah, go ahead.
Twitter is at DDJ Foundation. Facebook is DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. Instagram is at DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. And the website is www.ddjf.org.
Thank you so much. Please follow us on social media and share your story.
Once again, thank you, Sharon.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the DD Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.